The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now it's time for our Friday forum. We look back at some of the biggest stories of the week. We will be talking about the Fianna Fáil presidential campaign review, the Bondi mass shooting, the European Council meeting, the farmers protesting, the Mercosur deal and the Epstein images that have come out overnight, and more to come from the Department of Justice in the United States later today. I'm joined on the line by Aaron McGreehan, TD, a Louth TD, chair of the Oireachtas Committee on Further and Higher Education Research, Innovation and Science, and the party spokesperson on research and innovation. Cian O'Callaghan, deputy party leader of the Social Democrats, Dublin Bay North TD, spokesperson for finance, public expenditure, infrastructure, public service reform and digitalisation, no less. And Kevin Doyle, who's just speaking for himself. He's the executive editor of the Irish Independent and group head of news at Media House. Good morning and welcome one and all. I wanted to start, first of all, by what happened at the council meeting. It was endless, it would appear. They had a press conference at 3 a.m. So we'll go to you, Aaron, since we cannot see you, want to make sure we can hear you. What did you make of the outcome of the council meeting?
Well, I have to say that we, you know, I welcome that the fact that we're holding tight on the Mercosur deal. The government has been very clear at the EU level and other countries that the concerns for Mercosur are real, they're legitimate, and they're shared by our other member states. I have to say that the work that Taoiseach has been doing and other other government members, and including Barry Cowan at a parliament level, has been really effective and really, really important. I welcome the fact that, there is a pause on it. Irish farmers do operate at the highest environmental and animal welfare standards in the world, and that we must be very, very careful to protect our ag sector.
This is only a delay, you know that. I mean, yeah. Italy is probably going to come on board and allow the qualified majority to get it through, and it'll be signed in January. So,
well, I think the deal is not done, and European Council and European agreements are always about the last hour and the eleventh hour. So I think that any agreement must include incredible legally binding safeguards. Absolutely not political promises. And I have to stress that the government, stance has not changed on this over since the program of government has been set up. There is a clear need to make sure that all, SBS,
so,
all
so
its
hang on, clarify exactly what we stand for here, because there are those who feel we need to sign the trade deal, especially the way Trump is behaving. You need as many markets open as easily and readily as possible in the world. Agriculture represents a tiny fraction of our exports these days. So what is the government's stance? Is it kind of waiting for assurance and reassurance and reassurance upon reassurance? Is that what it's waiting for? And then we'll go along with it. Is that the stance?
What we're looking for is, Barry Cowan has been very, very clear in this. The Taoiseach has been very, very clear in this. Our Minister of Agriculture has been very clear in us that every single agreement, it has to include credible, legally binding safeguards, not political
promises.
That's what
I said to you. You're looking for reassurance, but you're eventually going to go along with the deal.
We're looking for legally binding safeguards. And, we're already seeing, there will be extra EU controls. The Commission has announced additional SBS audits, stronger bilateral safeguards. And Ireland...
Now, hang on a second. When the IFA went off and investigated themselves, this was on foot of the scandal here of a recall of beef that should have been stopped in the factories in South America and wasn't, and made its way to European shops and European consumers. And they came back and said, you can't trust them. So what will reassure you?
I commend the IFA and the Farmers Journal on their work on that. It's really, really important and really, really effective work. And it is seen that they have changed the course of European policy in relation to this. And that recent recall of the Brazilian beef is, that underlines why the rigorous SBS controls really matter.
Cian, where does your party stand on this?
We're opposed to Mercosur. The government are talking about legally binding safeguards, but they're not saying what those safeguards are going to be, and they're not spelling it out. And Simon Harris was asked about this in the Dáil yesterday, and Micheál Martin during the week, and they're very vague on this. They're saying, well, we might be opposing Mercosur, or there might be a significant minority blocking, enough to block it at a European level.
It looks like that may not happen. I mean, there was a conversation between Giorgia Meloni and President Lula yesterday of Brazil, and it doesn't seem like there's a delay. That's all. That's
yeah,
all
there's a delay into January. That's yeah. certainly the case. And look, this has huge repercussions potentially for Irish agriculture, but there's also in terms of sustainability, there's already been a massive destruction of the Amazon rainforest. This is only going to drive more deforestation in Brazil. You know, you've got pesticides used there that are banned in Europe, hormones that are banned in Europe. So, you know, talking about safeguards and all being very vague, I don't think is going to give reassurance to
Irish farmers.
Okay, Kevin,
is this going to follow an inevitable course?
Oh, I think so. In a post-Brexit and current Trump world, Europe wants more trade and they're looking to South America. The reality is that I think within government, there's an uncomfortableness about this, but there is certainly a view from people I've been talking to that the Taoiseach wants to get this across the line, that ultimately we got the nitrates deal for the farmers, which many had predicted we wouldn't in recent weeks. And yes, there's going to be a backlash, but ultimately Ireland will fall in line on this particular one. It is not the hill that they're going to die on. So whatever might happen in the new year, I think ultimately it's not going to be a situation if France, Italy, others all come on board that Ireland are going to say, hold on, the Irish farmer is never going to accept this. So they will fall in line.
Now, you hear the voices saying we were sold out on our fish. Now you're selling us out on our food production. Da, 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 da. I mean,
it's a tricky one, though, because you can't win all. And you reference that agriculture is now kind of falling down the list of exports. So for farmers, I suppose it's unfortunate that you kind of get lumped in as part of a deal that includes all sorts of other things like tech, for example, yeah. that we would export quite a lot of, and medicines, other areas. Farming is just one of the things in a trade deal. And obviously,
yeah, I mean,
it's a much more emotional thing than pharmaceuticals.
Think of a small pack of sophisticated pharmaceuticals and think of how much profit is possible to be made on that compared to a litre of milk or a steak.
Yeah, and look, and I suppose part of the fear is that it's not even what goes back and forth across the Atlantic. It's also our beef circulating within the EU that's pushed off the shelves because this other beef is cheaper. You have to have a lot of sympathy for farmers. There's no doubt about that. If it's not a level playing field, it's not an unreasonable ask to say it should be a level playing field in terms of the standards they have to live up to. But
why are we allowing the South Americans to kind of dilute those standards? Because they don't really want the kind of rigorous inspection and they don't want the kind of controls that we impose here. Are they saying they simply can't do it or they won't do it?
Well, I think the real fear is that we can raise those standards, and we have. I mean, the deal does seem to have moved some ground in pushing them to raise their standards closer to what we're expected to do here in Ireland. But the truth is, as that investigation you cited, is that we've no faith in them to actually...
Yeah.
I mean, you can have
a speed limit, but if everyone drives above it, you know, what use is the speed limit?
Exactly. And can you spend the whole time testing beef coming into the country? That's not reasonable.
No, they're supposed to do it at source. The other element of the deal was the money for Ukraine. And it turns out that the EU is going to pony up this money itself, with a few exceptions, like for Hungary and its pals, its pro-Putin pals.
Hungary, Slovakia and the Czechia.
Yeah.
Which would all object to you calling them pro-Putin, Pat. But
so they might, but...
But they have, they didn't stand in the way, which is interesting. And maybe there's a real vibe. There's people all over the country today at their desks and they're kind of trying to clear the deck before Christmas. And the EU meeting last night felt a little bit like that they have all these big, heavy topics at the end of the year that they don't want to come back to. And certainly it's surprising, I think, how that played out. Obviously, Belgium stood their ground because they were worried about the other option that was on the table in terms of using some of the frozen Russian assets. And could that come back to haunt them? So, look, I suppose it's good they got a deal done. It is unusual that you have those countries kind of just standing by and you know, clearly objecting, but not objecting.
Cian?
Yeah, I think it's important that the deal was done. Clearly that support is needed for Ukraine. And if without that, it would have put Ukraine in a very, very weak position. I think we're going to increasingly see that at a European Union level. We're going to see a small number of countries objecting to these sorts of measures and deals and then maybe being given an opt-out as a way of getting agreement. It has become very difficult at a European Union level to get agreement on these sorts of measures. So that's the important thing that there was. Just in relation to trade, though, just want to make one point. We are having a kind of double standard happening now at a European Union level. It's like trade liberalisation in certain areas, but when it comes to areas that affect the German economy and their manufacturing, car manufacturing, and so forth, there's a talk about making things more restrictive and moving towards more protectionism. And we've seen this kind of double standard play out.
This is with regard to Chinese cars.
Yes, absolutely. So,
but the Germans are going into China to manufacture VWs for the Chinese market. They'll do it in China. And equally, the Chinese are coming over and setting up factories to build cars and batteries in Europe to get around those very protectionist ideas.
But I'm just making a point, when there's risks for manufacturing in economies like Germany, then a very different view is taken than when there's risks for some of the industries that are very important to us, like beef production and chicken production as well. So we do need to see, in terms of European Union, it can't be trade liberalisation when it suits certain countries and then protectionism when it doesn't suit them. We should see a consistent standard being applied.
Aaron, the whole question of Ukraine and European money, it's a loan, but it's interest-free, that is being offered to Ukraine. They're leaving Putin's money intact in Brussels without touching it.
Yeah, here, I welcome the agreement. And, you know, it's really, really important that Europe stands with Ukraine and supports them. Yes, there is the interest-free loan. I would have, you know, I suppose personal issues with trying to make sure, you know, making sure that we protect European funding, making sure we protect the people that matter in you know, that like farmers, making sure that the cap budget, there is money for those sort of fundings in the future.
You think, however, that the money we're giving to Ukraine might diminish the amount of money for farmers?
Well, there is not an infinite amount of money at a EU level. However, I wouldn't begrudge a cent to Ukraine on making sure that they recover and protect themselves. It's really, really important that Europe stands with Ukraine. I welcome that there is a deal done. That's the most important thing here. It is important that we, you know, strengthen Ukraine's resilience and their ability to fight this war.
Oh, Aaron, I'm going to stay with you on the domestic politics, and that was the outcome of the Jim Gavin review within your party. Were you happy with the outcome?
I suppose you can't be happy with the outcome of the presidential debacle of Fianna Fáil. And I just want to preface, like, you know, Micheál Martin, he gave me my start in the Oireachtas. I was nominated by Micheál, and I'll always be incredibly grateful for that. And
is there a but coming up?
I suppose there is a but, absolutely. And I won't pretend that this has been deeply bruising experience for the party. Fianna Fáil, as you know, Pat, we're a very proud and confident political movement. We don't shy away from elections. In fact, we love elections. And we really take, you know, pride in going out, knocking on doors and standing with our people, asking the public for support. And that is why it is shaking people. It is shaking their members. It's shaking me. It's shaking our councillors and activists. And, you know, many in the party and many in the parliamentary party feels that this debacle is something that happened to us, not something that we collectively decided on or owned. And that distinction really, really matters.
You were ambushed by your own lack of rigor, it would appear. I mean, we had the Taoiseach on talking about this the other day, and he did make the point that you ask a guy five times, has he any problems with a tenant, and he says no recollection of that. What are you supposed to do? Because if you don't trust him, you shouldn't be running him.
Well, here, I suppose this goes into the internal party, you know, matters. You know, Fianna Fáil didn't, you know, Fianna Fáil members, Fianna Fáil parliamentary party were not part of the decision making. And we, you know, and many of the people in the PP voted for Jim Gavin on the basis that, you know, they trusted the word of Micheál Martin, that they trusted the word of the leadership, and that there was enough work done behind the scenes that Jim Gavin was a
good
candidate.
When you had a choice to vote in one of your own as candidate, Billy Kelleher, you didn't do it.
Well, I
do you know what I mean?
I voted for Billy at the convention. You know, well, I did. I personally didn't. I voted for Billy at the convention. I was very disappointed that we didn't have Billy, you know, as our candidate. But it goes back to further back than this, Pat, and you know my questions that are not answered in the report, and I stated very clearly at the parliamentary party the other night that, you know, the report does deliver more questions, it doesn't deliver the answers of when.
So what do you want answered? What do you not know that you think you should know?
Well, I don't know that. When did we decide that we were going to run a candidate in the first place? When was it decided that Bertie Ahern, Billy Kelleher, Mary Hanafin and many other people who came forward looking for a Fianna Fáil nomination, when was it decided that they were not a good enough candidate? When that was decided? I don't know that. It's not answered in the report. There's many things that aren't answered in the report. But I think, to be honest, those questions were highlighted at the parliamentary party meeting the other night. We had a lot of listening ears from the leadership. And he came into your studio on Wednesday morning and spoke about it. I think that it's very important that in the new year those answers, those questions are answered.
This row is going to rumble on. And does it place Micheál Martin's future in jeopardy? The man who gave you your start, I mean, is it time for you to give him his end?
I suppose this is an internal party matter, and I revel in the fact that it's getting such intense media attention, because I suppose it tells you something else, that Fianna Fáil is absolutely part of the fabric of the country and people really care what we do and what we say. But I think stress that, this is not about personal, personalities. It's about process. It's about trust. It's about us making sure that the future is about Fianna Fáil. And that's where my focus is. And the members of Fianna Fáil are asking for leadership. They're asking for
answers.
I want
to get the other's take on this. Kevin?
Find it interesting that Erin is revelling in it. I think she might be the only Fianna Fáil TD who's revelling in it. But I think she makes a few interesting points, because I do think for a lot of TDs, particularly those in the middle ground, there is a bit of head scratching left to do after that report came out. Because, the media and Leinster House, it's often referred to as a bubble. And knowing the background to how the story came about, I don't believe that Fianna Fáil couldn't have figured out what this was about.
In other words, if Fianna Fáil could do it, they could too.
It wasn't exactly a secret going around the Irish Independent newsroom or the Sunday World newsroom, and journalists are a gabby bunch, and politicians are not too discreet a lot of the time either. So I don't believe, they may not have known the details, they may not have known €3,300, but I think if they had made an attempt to find out, if they had gone beyond asking Jim Gavin, I suspect they might have found enough to go, there is something to this, though. What is it? And that never happened. So that kind of lack of curiosity makes me think.
Was it to do with the lack of confidence in the people who did put their hands up? Now, Billy, the Taoiseach said the other morning to me, it's a bit confusing whether Billy really wanted it or not at various stages. But certainly Mary Hanafin wanted it and Bertie Ahern wanted it. I mean, there were other names mentioned as well.
There was a string of academics mentioned linked to Fianna Fáil. There was people like Niall Quinn. Yeah. There was just names all summer. And this is one of the head-scratching bits, there was names circulating all summer that Fianna Fáil never denied any of them. So they were appearing on the front pages of different newspapers, and Fianna Fáil were letting that play out. And in the meantime, it was back at the start of June, Jim Gavin was not signed up, but was certainly in talks and then met the Taoiseach in July. So all along, they knew who their man was, and they let all that play out.
Cian?
Yeah, if you look back a bit, there was this received wisdom, going about the main parties, the larger parties, earlier in the year, that a presidential candidate shouldn't emerge until about September. That would be a massive mistake for them to be exposed over the summer, over, the August silly season, all that sort of stuff. So I think there was a deliberate attempt, not just Fianna Fáil, others as well, to hold back their candidates until that point, to ensure there wasn't that kind of level of scrutiny. I think that backfired. This obviously backfired spectacularly here. I think this has caused a real problem for Fianna Fáil, but also for us as a country, because this is what the focus has been on. We had a 5-hour Fianna Fáil parliamentary party meeting about this a few nights ago. We didn't have discussion for 5 hours about record numbers of children in homeless emergency accommodation this Christmas, or what we're going to do about our health crisis, our housing crisis, our cost of living, our disability issues. So it is taking attention away. I think, look, if Fianna Fáil want to change their leader, that's a matter for them, but they should either just get on with it and do it.
Maybe a more fundamental question, because politicians will come and go. But the point is, there were so many spoiled votes, and they clearly, many people were not happy with the choice they got.
No, I think that's
the person who was your candidate, greeting Greta during the week and so on, maybe a bit tone deaf, the whole operation of that.
Given not to everybody's tastes, let's put it that way.
Yeah, but Bondi and all that, there are elements around that. But you know, people were not happy with the, that they were limited to that choice.
I think there should have been more choice.
The outcome might have been the same, by the way, if you had three or four candidates, but still.
No, and I think people weren't happy with the limited choice. And I think actually it was a real mistake to hold back candidates for that long with this idea of, oh, we'll escape the scrutiny, therefore everything will be fine. It's the opposite actually carried out. So if this had been done sooner, there'd been more time for discussion internally in the larger parties and so forth, I think that just would have been healthier. We would have had a better contest, better outcome. Issues like this might have aired earlier and been dealt with earlier as well.
Finally, we should talk about the Epstein files. Do you think we'll get anything from this today, Kevin? Because, you know, the Democrats are leaking what they're getting from the Epstein estate, but the Department of Justice is compelled, they say, to release all of these files today.
Yeah, well, I have very little faith in anything the American government administration says it's going to do. Everything is media managed, everything is controlled. So, and obviously the Democrats have been dropping out kind of strange tidbits with no context, so it's hard to know what a lot of it means. Like, they're not going to release anything that's going to threaten Trump's reign, if we can call it that. So let's see what comes. But I would reference back to the JFK files, which was another big conspiracy in the MAGA world. And it hasn't changed the course of history, has it, since they came out?
Yeah. Well, did they all come out again? You know, when you look back on the Warren Commission and all of that, you wonder how could one bullet have done all that they said it did. Did a U-turn and all the rest. I don't want to fuel a conspiracy
theory. I'm not going to litigate that one, Pat.
But there are many, question marks still over all of that. A second-year law student could have investigated the Jim Gavin episode in a matter of an afternoon.
Well, I dispute that now.
An A student, clearly. Yeah. what does this Fianna Fáil internal strife matter a jot to me? We need to move on. So, Aaron, finally, you're not prepared to move on.
No, well, I suppose for me, yes, and your speaker, Sarah, and your texters are completely correct. This is a distraction. But for me, it's about, you know, getting those issues examined and sorted out properly. Trust matters. And people are absolutely correct. There is a government to run. Fianna Fáil members, and I can tell you that, you know, I'm not sitting here navel-gazing, thinking about Micheál Martin, thinking about Jim Gavin. I have far more important things to be dealing with.
Well,
the cost of living pressures and delivery for the people of Louth.
I hope you're thinking about preparing for a lovely Christmas, Aaron. Thank you very much for joining us. Aaron McGreehan, TD of Fianna Fáil from Louth. Cian O'Callaghan, who's Deputy Party Leader with the Social Democrats. And Kevin Doyle, Executive Editor at the Irish Independent and Group Head of News at Media House. Thank you one and all, and a happy Christmas to all three of you.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.